And I just had to look at my notes because I couldn't believe it's 276 episodes. I'm sitting here thinking, I wonder what episode we'll be on when Sven finally gets released. Ready? I'm ready. I can imagine Sven goes back. If he can go back and listen, I imagine he'll be, he might be like, you know, some of that's pretty good. And some of it he's liable to be like, Grandpa, what were you on that day? Really bad day. Give me a break. I'm not used to doing, three shows a week. It's not what I'm used to. Nah, it's all good. I'm glad you're here. We're going to have a great time. Fun discussion. If it's your first time stopping by, it gets better, I hope. I can't tell you it's going to get better. I think the show will get better. I can tell you we'll have a Christian-specific segment. That's roughly the halfway point of the show. Stick around for that. Don't tune out. Don't be like, well, that'll be boring. It's usually not. It's usually not. So be sure and stick around. I encourage you to do that. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. Pay those tithes. That is all very much appreciated. I do only do the ultimate privacy coin, the blockchain known as the U.S. Postal Service. I got snail mail. And that's all I'm doing. That is my new thing. We're just doing snail mail. Right there. Look here on the description page right here for this show. You'll see it right there. Do it to it. It is very much appreciated. It makes a difference. And again, I am grateful. So with all that being said, that cues us right up for the listener supporter mailbag. Grand Junction. Thank you. No note there, but I did want to let you know. As always, I always want to let y'all know that it got here. I do appreciate it. Some people like to put notes in and some don't. Sometimes people put notes in, then the next time same people don't put notes in. That's all good. But I always do like to at least say something. You know, I understand people want to be completely anonymous, and I respect that. I go out of my way to try to ensure y'all's anonymity and your privacy, respect your privacy. But at the same time, I want you wondering, did it get there or not? So I at least like to throw something out there. GPD, thank you for holding things down during Sven's political persecution. And that's from Mr. T. You know, in a way, I try not to say too much about the specifics of his case because, you know, he's still there and he's still locked up. And I don't want the system to, like, take things maybe we say here and use it as some sort of excuse to make his life more difficult. But just for me personally, yeah, it is. It's there's no other way to frame it up. There's no other way to look at it. It's the premise of these speech laws is just, it's so utterly, I don't know. It's ridiculous. Again, for me personally, the idea that you can have a case based on such a vagary as incitement to hatred and convict somebody when you've not produced a single witness to say that there was any incitement. It's all based on, well, if you're uncomfortable listening, you know, hearing this recording of what this person said, then there you go. That's all the evidence you need. The system has strayed so far from any actual concrete notion of justice. It's all emotionalism. It's all vagary. It's all designed to be ill-defined. So that, you know, whoever gets targeted can be targeted. You know, there's no, I mean, in the Bible, nobody could be convicted of actual crime, you know, without there being multiple witnesses. And here you look at Sven, he's in jail. Not a single witness coming forward and saying, I was going through my life. I tuned into Radio Albion and started really hating after that. All I could think about was hatred. That's living for the hate. They just played recordings and said, see, this could be interpreted by somebody somewhere. We can't produce that somebody. But somebody somewhere, well, obviously somebody somewhere could always go off the rails and interpret something a certain way. It is what it is. Anyway, I don't get off on that, but it just, I don't know. Anyway, St. Paul, no note here. I did want to let you know. I did get it, though. I appreciate it. I know I got your name on the envelope. I'm not saying it because, as I said, I always try to fault on the side of maybe being overly protective of y'all's anonymity. Triangle Whip GPD. What a month. You have Gay Anal Juneteenth and Devil's Day. 6 months, 6 day, 6 hour, 1944. Now that's clown world. I'm pissed and laughing at the same time. It seems to be like, and I know I mentioned this before, it seems like the pride thing, they've really kind of dialed that down. It seems like the last couple of years, you know, during June, you couldn't go anywhere and it was being shoved in your face. And it seems like they've toned it down a little bit this year. Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm getting desensitized. I wonder how long, you know, the U.S. can continue to try to relive the glory days of World War II. I said on a recent show, what are they going to run out of first? World War II veterans or Holocaust survivors? It's a quick race. I think I know how the race will come out, but I'm just, you're never going to run out. I think a lot of that rings hollow, you know. Oh, they do their grand speeches. And you know, a lot of it is symbolic. I mean, what I mean is you can find funny symbolism when you look for it. Like, you had the D-Day celebration. So you got all of these leaders, you know, celebrating events that involved people that on every side that were multiple times more competent and, you know, real than these empty suits that have been appointed to represent. You know, you look at the people that were running in France or, you know, Britain, all these people, whether you agree or disagree with them. And then you look at these people now, you know, there's little Macron standing up there acting like, you know, he's somebody, you know, this weirdo. And then at the centerpiece of it, you have the U.S. Empire reliving its glory days, and they bring Biden out there, you know. And afterwards, instead of the discussion being like, well, you know, for all its faults, America saved because of the sacrifices of our heroes and the might and strength of God Bless America. We're not all speaking German and Japanese right now. You see, there'd be a line right down the middle of the country. And those on the left side of the country, they'd all have to speak Japanese. Those on the right side of the country, they would have to speak German, but because of the actions of our heroes and the might and the strength of America, there was no conversation like that. They bring these events up to stir up nostalgia. Instead, the big topic apparently on social media, I'm not on social media, but I read stories, and unfortunately, all these stories center around social media. Instead, the big discussion afterwards was whether or not Biden crapped his pants. That was the story, whether or not Biden crapped his pants, because it looked like he crapped himself. He had to get up and be escorted out early. Didn't know where he was. And isn't it symbolic? You have this big grand event, which when it happened involved people multiple times greater than these idiots now, trying to relive this. The representative of the crumbling empire, they bring this doddering senile old fool out here who may or may not have crapped his pants, who kept looking for his chair or whatever, didn't obviously, as usual, doesn't understand what's going on. And then they roll out some World War II vets who are somehow miraculously still alive, who all of them look more or less like, have this look on their face like, we don't even know what the hell. You know, what the hell? We damn sure didn't think it was going to turn out like this. Very symbolic. I think the reason they toning down some of the gay pride stuff, plus also, you know, really, you had like your focus on the D-Day. I really think they're shifting. They're looking forward. They're going to have to get people to rally up, rally around the flag. We're going to get a false flag at some point. They're escalating things. And at some point in time, they're going to have to get people back in the military. That's going to be a tricky thing. Americans always fall for false flags, historically speaking. People in this country just every time. And it doesn't matter how ridiculous the narratives have been, you know? Germans are out there smashing babies on the spikes on their World War I helmets, and the idiots believe it. My gosh, those evil Huns, they're out there impaling babies with the spikes on their helmet. That's why you would put a spike. Why? I was wondering, why the hell would you put a spike on your helmet? It's so you can impale a baby on it. To they're throwing babies out of incubators in Kuwait. But I think maybe it's a little glimmer of hope for humanity. It's getting to be a harder sell. You know, you look at the way the 40 decapitated babies and mass rapes on October 7th, that never got any traction at all. So I don't know. But I do think the fact that they're toning some of this down, I think they're starting to think about how they're going to have to get people, you know, rallied up somehow. I think they're going to have their work ahead for them, you know, ahead of them. They're going to have a tough time. What kind of false flag are we going to get? Probably something pretty severe, because they're going to have to whip up something that's going to convince people that they kind of have no choice. As much as they hate the government, they feel like they've been personally attacked. So they got to do something. I think if we wind up with a false flag, it's going to be worse than 9/11, because they're going to have something serious. At this point, they did another 9/11. People are like, well, we've been there and seen this shit before. They could not go with something like assassinating Biden, because a good portion of the country wouldn't give a shit. So they're going to have to do something. Nuke one of their own cities. It won't be the ones they live in, of course. But they're going to have to do something to make people feel like that, well, as much as they don't want to, they got no choice. And even then, I think it's going to be a tough sell. Oh, yeah, and Juneteenth. See, I don't care. I don't get upset about Juneteenth. It's like Martin Luther King Day. The only people that actually observe it as a holiday is like the banks and the government. That's it. Like nobody else. You're not going to go down. You're not going to go down to the feed store to buy, you know, to get some more cattle cubes to go feed your cows. And oh, crap, I forgot. It's Juneteenth. It's Martin Luther King Day. They closed the feed store. You know, you don't have to get groceries the day before because, oh, tomorrow's Juneteenth. The grocery stores aren't going to be open because we have this nationwide shutdown celebration holiday for Juneteenth. It's just made up, like everything else, fake. Only the people that close the banks and the government. And isn't it funny, just thinking about that off the top of my head, isn't it funny how, like, the bank holidays and the government holidays are just linked at the hip? You know, they're just kind of one of those little funny details that's so telling in and of itself. The bank, these made-up holidays like Juneteenth, the banks and the government, the post office and the bank, they're the only stuff that can be closed. The only ones actually observe these quote-unquote official new holidays are the banks and the government. It kind of tells you that there's quite a bit of connection there, like they're joined at the hip. Wonder which one runs the other. And finally, last one from our listener supporter mailbag, Gramps, some buckaroos for the show. I'd like to ask your thoughts on the proper approach to free speech. Most free speech advocates add exceptions, such as forbidding calls for violence, which means they are not truly free speech supporters. One interesting proposal I've read is that quote-unquote freedom of speech should instead be freedom to speak the truth. This would outlaw lying to the public and would probably be a huge improvement. In practice, absolute free speech is probably unworkable, and some restrictions are needed to keep society functioning optimally. What are your thoughts? All the best, Peter. Thank you very much, Peter. Thank you for the support, and thank you for the note. I'm running on nothing. I mean, usually I jot a few ideas down, so I have something, like when I actually start recording, I have something I can look at. So just sitting here with a blank look on my face, and I go back and say, oh, I was going to talk about this. Unfortunately, the fact that I'm doing two daily nationalist shows during the week takes away the stuff that I would normally use in the front page of the show. So I'm running on nothing today. Heck, I'm even running on nothing in the Christian specific segment for the most part. Just starting from scratch. So, yeah, I appreciate you give me something to run on here. Some fuel for the fire. Free speech. Okay, let's do this. Let's do this. One of the things I found have found that has been a difficult pill to swallow is that free speech as an Enlightenment idea was a ruse. It was a lie from the beginning. As somebody who's, you know, talks about free speech and we should have free speech, I realized it was a law. It was a lie. It was a way to get around blasphemy laws. And once they got their way, and what did they do? They shut down your actual speech. It's like how they convinced everybody they had the right to protest the government until they have the upper hand. And then now all of a sudden that's shut down. It was a lie. They lied to us, told us we had this freedom of speech, and it doesn't actually exist. And you have people that go around and think that we really have that. It's been a hard thing to accept that the old concept of free speech doesn't exist. It was a lie from the beginning. In other words, you're going to have restrictions on speech. The whole lie they told us from the get-go that, oh yeah, no, we have this concept of freedom of speech and everybody's free to speak their mind. That was a lie. There's always going to be somebody shutting your speech down. Now, when they didn't have the upper hand, they promoted this idea, I'm exercising my freedom of speech. Now, once they have the upper hand, they're shutting down the free speech. In other words, it never existed to begin with. It's a ruse. It's a spook. It's a ghost everybody's chasing around. It's never existed, actually. It was just a concept that was put out there so that people would let their guard down and let these subversive have their free speech to undermine. We should have just stuck with the blasphemy laws and said, no, you're not. Get out. We didn't do that. So we understand that free speech doesn't exist. It's a lie. And this is, like I say, this is something hard for me to accept. It's been hard for me to accept. And maybe in a lot of ways, I'm still in the process of processing it. But it's a lie. Somebody's always going to say, that's not allowed. You're not allowed to say that. So understanding this, understanding it was a lie from the get-go, we can strip it off. You know, we can abandon it. You know, as a believer, one of the central things Jesus said was that the truth will set you free. And there's a very, very deep meaning in that. When you get to the truth of the matter, even if it's uncomfortable, even if it's difficult, even if it's something that's hard for you to accept, when you get to the truth of something, you can actually start dealing with reality. Dealing with situation. And the truth of the matter is free speech, this idea of free speech, this Enlightenment idea was a lie from the get-go. It was a lie. And now, you know, because it was a lie, everybody's sitting around going, well, what about my free speech? And they still understand they were lying. Y'all, I thought y'all respected this. The conservatives, you know. I thought y'all's principles said that we had the freedom of protest. Where's that now? They don't care. And it never registers with them that they don't care. What about my freedom of speech? You know, we let y'all have your freedom of speech. What about my freedom of speech? It was a lie. Get it. Figure it out. It was a trick. It was a trick when they came up with it centuries ago. It doesn't exist. Somebody's always going to be in authority and say, yeah, no, you're not allowed to say that. Wrapping our minds around the fact that the concept of free speech was a lie from the get is the truth that we can start working our way back from. You know, and understanding, look, don't keep holding on to the lie. You know? Don't keep playing the rigged game. When you understand that that was a lie from the get-go, don't keep beating your head against the wall going, but what about my free speech? They lied, okay? Just accept it. We probably should have understood earlier that it was a lie. No, we didn't. Mm-hmm. The fact that they intentionally, we were just talking about here, the other listener, you know, we were just talking about Sven and his situation. On the one hand, they say, oh, you have freedom of speech. And then on the other hand, they put people in prison for their speech, for vague ideas without producing any witnesses. And yet people live with that contradiction. Now, if you told the average person in Britain, for example, do people in China have freedom of speech? And they would, the vast majority would say, well, no way, man. No way. They don't have freedom of speech, man. The evil Chinese Communist Party makes sure they don't have the freedom of speech. But they do The difference is in China, everybody knows what you're not allowed to talk about because they don't promote this lie of freedom. See, the difference is you don't have freedom of speech either. They point to a place like China and say, you don't know how good you got it, buddy. You live in America. If you were over there in China, you wouldn't have this freedom. More of these hollow callings and pointing to American freedom, you know, and yet it's becoming more and more ill-defined. You're lucky. So they have to point over here, assuming that you don't have any idea what goes on in China. Most of that stuff is promoted by people who are ignorant with the assumption that you're ignorant too. You're lucky you got freedom of speech. You're in America. You're in Britain. If you were over there in China, you wouldn't have any freedom of speech now, would you? And yet, because in China, they don't promote this lie of freedom of speech. This goes back to what I was saying, wrapping your mind around that this whole idea of freedom of speech was a lie from the get-go. Because they're not promoting this lie of freedom of speech in China, they have concrete rules that people know. You're allowed to say whatever. However, this is off limits. You're not going to go on social media. You're not going to go out here and promote these things that are counter-critical, subversive to the government, to the party. You're not allowed to do that. Whatever else you want to talk about, you know, that's fine. In China, they don't care if you talk about blacks, Jews, homosexuals, any of that thing. But you're not allowed to, you know, slander Chairman Xi. And everybody knows. It's clearly outlined. This is what's allowed. This, as long as you're not in the not allowed box, they don't care. They don't care what you're talking about. They're not going to ban you. They're not going to come harass you. Where you go over here to Britain or over here to the U.S. and they say on the one hand, because it's a lie. Remember, the whole concept of freedom of speech is a lie. It was from the beginning. We have to accept that. Here in America or Britain, especially, they'll tell you, you know, oh, you have freedom of speech. But they don't give you, you're not allowed to talk about what's in this box. They say you have freedom of speech, except for some things, but we're not going to tell you what those things are. If you talk about blacks, Jews, homosexuals, whatever, in Britain, you're probably going to get in some form of trouble. And yet they don't outline this is what you're not allowed to talk about. You try to pin them down and they're like, well, we can't really tell you that. But if it could be construed by somebody as being hateful, you're not allowed to say it. Well, somebody's always going to be able to construe it. You can always find somebody. Although apparently maybe not. It doesn't matter if you can't find somebody, as in my opinion, Sven's case, and produce any witnesses saying I was incited to something. Like I said, I don't like to get into specifics of his case too much because I don't want him, you know, to use that as a battering ram to give him a hard time. But just for me personally, my personal opinion, it's absurd. So in a way, getting back on topic, in a way, the country, in this case, China, that quote unquote does not have freedom of speech. What that means is they do not promote the lie of freedom of speech. They just come out and say, well, you're not allowed to say these things. It's a fairly limited list. You're not allowed. As long as you're not in that list of on that list of things you're not allowed to say, you're good to go. We don't care. We're not going to hassle you. We got other things. We got actual things we're doing here. And then you go to the free speech countries and they're like, well, you have freedom of speech, but if you say things you're not allowed to, you're going to get in trouble. What are those things? We can't tell you that. But we'll know them when we see. We'll know them when we see them. It was a lie. It was a lie. You look at what they were just trying to do in Georgia. They have all these NGOs they flood these countries with, and they're obviously warming up for yet another color revolution in Georgia, the country, not the American state. And they pass that law that says, well, if you're an NGO and you're receiving all this money from foreign governments, you're going to have to register as a foreign agent, which is like, no, no kidding. Why the hell didn't they have that law to begin with? And, oh, we had all these, what about freedom of speech? Oh, my gosh, it's a Russian law. It's a lie. It's all about subversion. Now, another thing presented by this question about free speech is this is a limitation. I've really... There's nothing wrong with having an ideology to kind of have a framework, but I'm against the idea of like being wedded to these ideologies, like they're some sort of holy doctrine, because they're never going to cover every situation, you know, and that's the limitation. You wind up, people will say, this ideology, I believe in this. And they'll have some sort of, and most of the time, this ideology could be written on a napkin. It's not exactly really expansive. I believe in this principle. I believe in this ideology. And on the surface, that may look good, but the problem is it's not going to cover every situation. And people get so wedded to the ideology that they run into a situation where it's like, oh, but this doesn't make any sense. But the ideology dictates that I do it anyway. You should never be doing something that makes no sense because the ideology says so. That's idolatry. That's creating a false god out of your ideology. Now, again, I understand the importance sometimes of having an ideology for the people, you know, to rally around. But it can't cover every situation. And it runs into problems. In other words, doing what's best for each individual situation, you know, or the problem that comes up, talking about in a society, you know, that should always come first. What's the best solution? Not, well, this is the best solution, but it kind of runs counter to our quote-unquote ideology, so we can't do what's best. We're going to have to go over and do this self-defeating thing because that fits in our ideological box. This is something I think that's very much limited to this stupid democracy system, too, by the way. Because if you have a monarch, if you have a king, he just makes the best decision and is what the king says. So you have a problem, society runs into a problem, you know. For instance, one part of the country is undergoing a famine. And the people are going without food. And the king decrees, well, this other part of the country is doing okay, so we're going to take some of that wheat and ship up here to the other part of the country so these people, our fellow citizens, don't starve to death. He doesn't have to sit there and go, well, that would be socialism. We can't do that. The king looks at the problem and says, this is the solution. We're going to have to move some resources so half the country doesn't starve to death. So maybe next year those people can still be productive and then we'll have an abundance of food. The king just said it. Yeah, just sit around and go, but wait a minute, that runs counter to our ideology. Our ideology demands that that half of the country has to starve to death because by golly, we don't want to be doing some form of socialism. Runs counter to common sense. When you have a king, he just makes a decision. Everybody says, well, that's the king's word. That's what we're going to do. We're not going to sit here and say, well, that falls outside of the ideology. It's silly. It becomes ridiculous. It becomes self-defeating. But you see, that's why it's central to the democracy system, because you have to have something. So under these democracy systems, well, you have to have this group. You know, Team R, this is their ideology, supposedly, even though they violate that supposed ideology all the time. This is the ideology they promote, they market themselves under, the conservatives. Same with the Tories in Britain. The conservatives, we're the conservatives. The Tories have run on, they're going to shut down the immigration now for I don't know how many years, and they just never do it. But that's the ideology that they say they promote, that they sell, that they market themselves to. Because of this democracy system, you have these parties, they have to promote themselves, and to promote themselves, they have to market themselves. And the way they market themselves is with these ideologies. We're libertarians, we're conservatives, we're liberals, this is how we're marketing ourselves. We have this ideology, and we're not going to violate it, no matter how little sense it makes. If the nation of Georgia sat there and said, well, our ideology is freedom of speech for everybody, no matter where they're from, and so we're not going to pass this, then they're going to wind up with a color revolution that overthrows the government and puts some Western puppet in there that's going to gin up a war with Russia that they're going to lose, and people are going to die and get killed. But by golly, we stuck with our guns. See, it doesn't make any sense. These ideologies, it's just ideology. I guess a good bullet point punctuation mark to put on the end of this. Ideology is nothing more than marketing for these different political parties. And that's all it is. If you had a king, you don't need ideologies. You just have the word of the king. The king will have a vision of where he wants to take the country. Sometimes kings in the past didn't have very good vision, or they had a negative vision and they took the country in the wrong direction. But you can't look at the democracies we have today and exactly claim they're going the right way now, can you? Once in a while, you got lucky and you got a king that had great vision and understanding, and he looked at the big picture and he was smart and he had good advisors surrounding himself with, and they came up with good plans. He had the nobles and the church backing him up to help him implement this vision. Everybody was bought in on the vision, and they moved the country, they moved the nation, the people forward. Instead, we have the democracy system where we sit there and market these different parties with these different ideologies, and things keep getting worse and worse and worse. Anyway, thank you. Thank you very much. Gave me something to go on about. I do appreciate it. Time to get in the Christian specific. Time's flying. We're having fun. We're going to get into the Christian specific segment here. So you know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon at the Parish of the Patriots. You know, I think that's inevitable as a person goes growing through life, you know, growing up. You know, you go into young adulthood, and of course you mature through the years. And I think it's inevitable that for a lot of people you're going to go through a libertarian phase. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think in your political maturity, it's perfectly normal to go through a libertarian phase. What the problem arises when you don't grow up out of that. You know, you still wind up, you have guys that are like my age and they're still clinging to it. Now, I'm not talking about libertarianism in the sense of, you know, you just think government power should be limited so that they don't, you know, they can't be oppressive to the people or whatnot. I'm talking about hardcore, you know, big L libertarianism, no government at all, anarcho libertarianism, no government at all. And you'll see, I'll come across people in writings and writing articles who are these anarcho libertarian types. And, you know, we don't need any government. The answer is no government at all. Then, because you see, according to this idea, all government is ultimately going to be tyrannical and ultimately going to be oppressive. So the answer is no government. You just do no government at all and everything will work out fine. There's always, it's one of those ideas that's like communism. It looks really good on paper, but when you get into the nuts and bolts, how that's going to work, much less when it's been put into practice, it doesn't work out so good because it's not realistic. You think about, remember when they did that, what was that called? That Chaz or whatever, up in, I guess it was Portland. You know, during the George Floyd, they made an autonomous zone. Now, there was a miniature picture of this anarcho-libertarian of no government. People weren't flocking to go live there because it was some sort of paradise. Quickly descended into a crime-ridden hellhole. People say you don't need a central authority, a governing authority to keep the order, to make things work, why everybody could just do their own thing, just do their own thing, and as long as people just choose not to bother other people or steal their stuff, everything will be fine. Again, I guess this can look good on paper. It becomes pretty ridiculous if you really start thinking about it and trying to think, you know, how would this work? They get off into things like, oh, well, the people could organize themselves into volunteer police forces so that when somebody does violate these libertarian principles, the volunteer police force, the posse, you just form a posse and go round them up. But somebody's got to organize the posse. somebody's going to organize posses on a regular basis to do their thing. And people start organizing into groups. The criminals would start organizing into groups. And you're organizing your posse. And pretty soon you're competing for who's going to actually control the area, the group of criminals or your ever-growing posse. And you're at the head of the posse because you've had to order. Somebody's got to be in charge. Nothing gets done otherwise. And you're right back to square one. You're starting with the building blocks of forming some form of government. Now, you're probably sitting here going, Dan, I think you're confused. This is supposed to be the Christian. This is supposed to be the Christian specific segment. What the hell are you on about libertarianism? The way libertarianism doesn't make any sense when you really think about it, you can apply the same thing to morality. You see, we know just by your very instinct, by your very human nature, people have a basic built-in outline of the things that are right and the things that are wrong and how, you know, people should conduct themselves. I mean, we've seen a lot of that breaking down, but still, by and large, you have that rough framework. But why should we? Why should we bother conducting ourselves in this framework of morality? You see, the atheists will argue that somehow morality just exists out of nothingness. Atheist arguments fall apart very quickly, and usually it quickly turns into posturing and name calling. I remember years ago, I was having an internet back and forth back in the day with some atheists. And I said something along the lines of, well, if there is no God, then I should be free to do whatever I want. And this person was basically like, yes, that's right. Exactly. Spiritual libertarianism. Yes, it's going to be the most wonderful thing because now we have nobody telling us what to do. We can just live free, finally, of these fairy tales. So if I want to bash your head in and rape your wife because I want to do that. No, you can't do that. Oh my gosh. And I said, why? Well, why is it wrong? If we only have one life and I want to do that and this is what I desire and this is what's going to give me pleasure and happiness or feeling of contentment in the moment, why should I not do that? Just because you don't want me to? Why should I not be able to do that? It's quickly devolved into the atheist began posturing of, well, you see, I'm such a good person. I don't have to have God telling me not to do that. See, that's how awful you are. If you didn't have God telling you not to do that, that's what you would go and do. And of course, as usual with these people, it missed the point. This was before I fully grasped what a waste of time it was to engage with these people. Person quickly missed the point and went off into, oh, so you would just go and do that. The only thing keeping you from it is God telling you not to, and you're afraid to go to hell. Otherwise, you would go kill somebody and rape their wife. Again, completely missing the point. If you're going to actually believe in something akin to spiritual anarcho-libertarianism, then whatever you want to do is acceptable. And that's kind of a part of that satanic motto, do what thou wilt, whatever you want to do. Do it. Just if it feels good, do it. Whatever, do what thou wilt. That's basically the satanic creed. If there is no God, then your morality, just like an anarcho-libertarianism, is going to basically be whatever you decide for it to be. I've heard all these gibberish arguments. No, morality has been established over the years of our evolution. Never mind. By the way, it has been mathematically proven now that evolution by natural selection and all the other caveats they've added to that is mathematically impossible by going off of the number of mutations and how often, and it's a little more complicated than this is my forte, but it's been mathematically, the science It's hard to get more science than math. And it's been mathematically proven that that's impossible. And yet still they cling to it like a religion. I always say this hardcore atheism is a religion. Darwinism itself is a religion. They just follow a different god. But it's a religion and it has very fervent followers in this religion. Anyway, these people try to argue that no, morality, you see, is defined as the consensus that society has come together around. You see, everybody in the society comes together and has decided bashing your neighbor's head in and killing him and raping his wife is a bad thing. You're not allowed to do that. So the morality was invented by the society itself. The problem with this quickly arises is if society decides that that's okay, then it's no longer. In other words, morality is always fluid if it's just simply a consensus that a society, a group of people have come together. You could look around if you didn't know any better and you stepped out of another dimension and looked at America today and you'd say, well, the society has collectively decided that it's a very moral thing to do child trannies. It's a very moral thing. It's a very moral thing to do, you know, all this gay stuff and promoting this with the children, especially. So the society has decided that. People sit there and complain about Pride Month and yet make that very same argument. Well, as long as the society comes together and makes this consensus that that is what morality is, then that's what the morality is. Well, your society has decided that child trannies and doing Pride Month and celebrating this and making it the center point of everything is morality. It quickly falls apart. It quickly falls apart because morality has to come from authority. You have to have a central authority that says this is what it is and that it doesn't change. Otherwise, it doesn't exist. Otherwise, it's whatever you decide it is in the moment, and that's not something real. If you decide this is real and then tomorrow decide something completely opposite is real, you're all over the place and nobody can plan around that. There's no steady path to the future like that. You're just drifting from one thing to the other to the next. A morality that just comes into existence by the whims of man or what man decides is no morality at all because it could change tomorrow. You look at the fake morality, a good example of this. You look back over the last several years and you look at the fake morality of the so-called quote unquote woke. I really don't like that term, but to talk about so everybody knows what we're talking about. You look at the morality of the quote unquote woke crowd, you know, the Twitterazzi or whatever you want to call them, these people. And you look at how They will ultimately wind up a lot of times attacking their own people because what is allowed, what you are allowed to say and what you are not allowed to say is always in constant flux. And they have their little in-group and boy, they're attacking anybody. Well, that's an evil thinker. That's a bad person. And they'll attack them, you know, demand they get fired or whatever. But ultimately what happens is because their morality, their fake morality, is always in a state of constant flux. They wake up one day and now you're no longer allowed to say this word that yesterday was fine, was okay, but today it's not allowed and now it's a hate word. And someone ultimately in their group doesn't get the memo. And the next day rolls around and they use the term that the day before was a-okay. And suddenly the mob that they were a part of turns on them and starts ripping them apart. And they're like, why? Well, because that's not allowed. But it was fine yesterday. It's not today. It's oppressive. It's racist. It's very evil. You see, it's not a real morality because it's in constant flux. If you were like one of these people, I always used to laugh and say, you know, it must be really hard to be one of these people because you never know. You have to stay up on the latest definitions, on the latest list of what's approved and what is not. And if you're day late in getting the memo and you go out there and say something that's been moved from the approved list to the evil hate speech list, then you're in a lot of trouble. The group you're a part of turns on you and rips you to shreds because you're now an evil person. Because what's allowed to say and what isn't is in constant flux. This is what morality by consensus looks like. It looks just like that. I thought that word was allowed. No, it's not. That's an evil hate word. You should know that. But it was allowed yesterday. Forget that. Today it's not. Today that makes you an evil hater. You see, morality that's in constant flux like that can't be real morality because people can't work around it. Real morality has to come from authority. It has to come from on high. It has to come from the Lord. That's what makes it real morality. It comes from authority. If you come and just, if some Joe Rando walks up to you and says, you know what? From here on, you're not allowed to do this, that, or the other, whatever that thing may be. What's your reaction going to be? You're going to look at him and be like, well, who the hell are you to tell me what I am and am not allowed to do? You're going to get your bristles up. You know, you can get your hackles up. You look at him and be like, who are you? You know, some guy walks up and starts waving his finger at you in your yard and says, from now on, you are not riding your lawnmower until after 9 o'clock in the morning. And your first reaction is, who the hell are you? Who made you the authority? Morality has to come from authority. It has to come from the Lord. If we're all just here now and all that exists of our existence is right now in this mortal realm, then there is no morality. Because it's just, you should get everything you can while you're here. If it feels good in this moment, you could die tomorrow. So just do whatever. Piss on other people. Screw them. Just do whatever feels good to you right now. It doesn't make any logical sense. These people will appeal to logic and then go off on, well, you shouldn't just do whatever to other people. That would be wrong. But it's not. Not if you truly believe that all that exists is the here and the now. Your morality will be in constant flux because, logically speaking, if you truly believe that, then other people are irrelevant. You know, all that's going to matter to you during this short time of existence is what you can get out of it. If it feels good, if it benefits you, then that's all that makes logical sense. It doesn't make any sense to be considerate of other people because life is short. If this is all there is, like I say, It's like anarcho-libertarianism that when you really start trying to look at what's that supposed to look like in practical form, it falls apart very quickly. And yet people still cling to it. They still cling to the idea that you can have morality without a central authority, without an authority without an authority coming down. Now, because we do have a sense of morality, and no, it didn't just come because everybody decided as a group that that would be a good thing to do. That's bullshit. It's silly and it's a childish way of thinking. We do have an established, a basic parameter. You know, for a person that's not just a complete, you know, sociopath, psychopath, your average person, you know, if you sit there and started naming off things, you know, is this right? Is this wrong? They're probably, their viewpoint is going to be more or less in the same box as yours. Because we do have this established morality, which does come from authority. Now, to come from authority, it has to be backed up by something. An authority that cannot enforce it is no authority at all. There has to be the ability to enforce that. Otherwise, the authority doesn't exist. If somebody comes in to a room and says, I am an authority here, and everybody just looks at them and goes back to what they're doing, they're not going to be able to get anything done. Authority has to be backed up with something. It has to be backed up with the ability, you know, to see this through. Now, we know it was written, you know, the Lord, you know, vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. You know, now, this doesn't mean God's going to be your personal enforcer and go around, you know, and anybody who slights you that you don't like, he's going to go around and get your personal revenge for you. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, I will repay. This is God's promise of justice. We should always, as a society, seek and strive to see that justice is carried out. When you read in the Old Testament, when they were first establishing the nation of Israel, and they were establishing the laws around which, you know, the government and society was supposed to function, they set it up and said that you've got to be sure that justice is swiftly carried out, because if you don't, the people's hearts will be filled with evil schemes. People start thinking they can get away with things, and on the flip side of that, people start taking the law into their own hands. Justice has to be carried out. Now, sometimes justice isn't carried out. We see that a lot here in this failing society and the crumbling empire. You see justice more and more is not carried out. We see the system actually promoting injustice. Now, when the Lord said, vengeance is mine, I will repay, this is his promise, not to go out and settle your personal vendettas. That's petty and silly. That's God's promise of justice. Whether you see it in this life or in the next, he is going to balance those books. You know, there will, understand that there will be justice. There's not going to be anybody is going to, we look around at the vast amount of injustice that's carried out, the vast amount of corruption, the wicked in positions of power, and they lord this authority over others. And like it's just going to go on forever. And it can be frustrating for people, you know, because they say, where's the justice? Well, the Lord's promise is justice is going to get carried out. And a lot of times, more often than people understand, it's carried out in this life. It's not just a matter of on the day of the Lord. That's when the final book settling will be done, for sure. But also in this life, oftentimes justice is carried out. When you look at the rules and establishment, you know, the law, the way it was established when they were first setting up Israel, they had a lot of really good ideas. They had like what you would say would be like sanctuary cities, where if something happened, a person could flee to that city while not to escape justice, but while they were awaiting justice. They had these cities that were designated basically sanctuary cities, and that person could go there and they would be protected until the case could be heard by the judges and justice could be carried out. This makes a lot of sense, because say somebody comes up to you, runs up and says, you know, your brother's just been killed. He was out there working in the field with Joe Blow, and Joe Blow killed him. And in a rage, you pick up an axe and you go. You're going to go find Joe Blow and you're fixing to settle books. And you're going to go chase Joe Blow down and smash his skull in, because you just heard, you found out he killed your brother. When the reality of the situation is they were working together in the field and an accident happened. The head came off of the axe that Joe Blow was using, flew through the air and struck your brother in the head and killed him in an accident. You have to get all the facts for true justice. You going down and chasing Joe Blow, you don't know all the facts of the case. You don't know that it was just an accident. If you did know that, you'd be like, oh, well, I mean, yeah, you really can't be mad at Joe Blow. You know, he actually was really good friends with your brother. He didn't kill him out of malice. They were just working together and there was an accident. It's a whole different thing. You say technically, yeah, he killed your brother, but it was an accident. So they had these cities set up where in a case like that, Joe Blow would immediately flee to the sanctuary city. So when you came running up to the city gate with your axe, the authorities would stop you and say, no, you're not coming in here and smashing his head in. He's here. He's not going anywhere. He's not going to escape justice. He's here. We're going to keep him here until the judges can hear the case and find out exactly what happened. Again, this requires a central authority. Under anarcho-libertarianism, you just go smash Joe Blow's head in because, after all, he killed your brother. You have to have that central authority. Morality, likewise, has to come from authority. You cannot have a society, you cannot have morality while also abiding under do what thou wilt. You can't. It's not possible because it's a lie. Everything. Jesus said the devil is a liar. There is no truth in him. He dresses that crap up. He tries to brush it up and he tries to paint it up and make it look real. It's always, he is a deceiver and a murderer. It's always a lie. You cannot be following do what thou wilt and at the same time, you know, have morality. It's just not, because do what thou wilt is going to run over somebody else at some point in time. Morality has to come from authority. And the ultimate authority in that is the one who can carry it out. As I said, it's not real authority unless there's the ability to carry it out. Why is it that this basic framework that most anybody could understand that morality fits in, why have we had that with us for centuries, for all of these generations of people? Why is that? Because it comes from the Creator, because there's authority behind it. Again, there's no authority if there's no way to back it up. Because everybody does, most, I should say everybody, but the average majority of people do understand what fits in that morality box. That morality comes from authority. That's why people just instinctively understand what is right and what is wrong. Because that's a morality that comes from authority. Even if they deny the authority itself, they do understand on a certain level. That's why you get this contradiction. They'll say, I don't believe in the Creator God. I don't believe. We all just came here into nothing. You know, all of this complicated system that we live in, it all just came into being by pure coincidence, all on its own. All on its own. And yet they will adhere to morality more or less in that same box that you do. It's a contradiction. Why do you adhere to that morality? Because I'm a moral person. Morality cannot exist if it does not come from authority. So what authority do you proclaim the things in your morality box? Well, people just made that up. People just decided that was good. That's not authority. Well, our ancestors are not here. They can't enforce authority. So why do you adhere to authority in the box? You wind up into the, it all falls apart. The argument for this all falls apart very quickly because there's too many contradictions. You know, you have all these contradictions because it's not real. It's not real. Now, as we wrap up here, I point this out, not really because I care about atheist Bergs, but because for you as believers, to understand this is to increase your faith, to understand, you know, the tangible, real things you can understand the world around you, and understanding the Lord, understanding that the Lord's morality comes from his authority. And even those who refuse to acknowledge his existence ultimately abide in that morality. It has to come from somewhere, and it comes from the Creator God. In other words, reason I think it's important for us to look at it as we have today isn't because you're going to take what we've talked about and go convince some atheist Spurg. Trust me, you're not. But because for your own faith, you can understand these are not just empty words. This is morality that comes from authority. We understand God and we understand more about him and his existence and how what he has established, what he has created. You look at a piece of artwork And you can, you know, a good piece of artwork. I'm not talking garbage they promote is art. Although, I guess in a way you could apply it to that too. But if you look at a good piece of artwork, you should be able to understand something about the artist. The creation that the artist made, the creation tells you something about the creator, doesn't it? If when you've seen those pictures, you know, that a lot of these weirdo people have, you know, Pizzagate people, remember all that? And they were like, oh no, we're totally not a bunch of satanic pedophiles. And then they're like, but look at this picture some magazine took in your house. And that picture back there is, you know, a picture of children, you know, a painting of children being tortured, you know, that was painted with menstrual blood. When you see something like that, you can understand that the author was a very sick and wicked individual. A normal person wouldn't do that. You look at a piece of artwork, you look at the creation, you understand more about the creator. You understand, it gives you insight. You look at the artwork, you understand something about the artist. If you see a painting of children being tortured that was painted with blood, you understand that you wouldn't leave your kids around that artist now, would you? Somebody who's normal wouldn't decide to do that. That tells you understand something about the artist. When we look at and understand more about the creation, the world we live in, the rules that this world operates under, and I'm talking about, you know, the framework, the system. You look at the creation, you're going to understand more about the creator. You're going to understand more about the Lord. That's why it's important to look at these things and understand them, because this is how we learn about the Lord. Look at this framework, morality, why it exists, and the authority by which it comes from, and the fact that everybody who's existed basically understands that framework instinctively. Even those that vehemently reject the existence of the Creator altogether, and yet they still operate within that basic framework. So this is a testimony to the authority of the Creator. Anyway, we'll wrap up on that note. Hope you got something out of the show. As always, I really hope you got something out of the Christian specific segment. Appreciate all of you. I appreciate all of you stopping by. I really hope that I'll see you back here next week for the next installment of the Parish of the Patriots.